problems
and of the causes of religious, philosophical,
and racial antagonisms.
That is our mission.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Teresa Wersbianska. All eyes are on Iran and that country's response to the U.S.'s overnight attacks on three Iranian nuclear sites. A senior Iranian source told Reuters press agency today that most of the highly enriched uranium stored at the Fordo nuclear facility that was, quote, severely damaged, according to Pentagon officials, was moved to an undisclosed location ahead of the U.S. strikes last night. The source added that the number of personnel at the site had also been reduced to a minimum in anticipation of a potential attack. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio cast doubt today on CBS's Face the Nation.
No one will know for sure for days, but I doubt they moved it because you really can't move anything right now. And they can't move anything right now inside of Iran. I mean, the minute a truck starts driving somewhere, the Israelis have seen it and they've targeted it and taken it out. So our assessment is we have to assume that that's a lot of 60% enriched uranium buried deep under the ground there in Esfahan. And that really is the key. What they should do with that is they should bring it out of the ground and turn it over. Multiple countries around the world will take it and downblend it. That's what they should do with that.
The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran confirmed that attacks took place on its Fordo, Isfahan, and sites, but it insisted that its nuclear program will not be stopped. Iran and the UN nuclear watchdog said there were no immediate signs of radioactive contamination at the three locations following the strikes. Meanwhile, Iran's Press TV reported that the Iranian parliament approved a measure to close the Strait of Hormuz, through which around 20% of global oil and gas flows. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio called on China to encourage Iran to not shut down the strait after Washington carried out strikes on Iranian nuclear sites. Without concessions from Tehran, the crude oil price could open, quote, meaningfully above Friday's close, energy analysts from Clearview Energy Partners said today. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi announced today that he will travel to Moscow for high-level talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Russian Foreign Ministry condemned the American military intervention in Iran, saying it had undermined global efforts to contain the proliferation of nuclear weapons. However, the Kremlin has not announced any steps to help Iran. Araghchi condemned the attacks today and the U.S.-Israel alliance.
While President Trump was elected on a platform of putting an end to America's costly involvement of forever wars in our part of the world, he has betrayed not only Iran by abusing our commitment to diplomacy, but also deceived his own voters by submitting to the wishes of a wanted war criminal who has grown accustomed to exploiting the lives and wealth of American citizens to further the Israeli regime's objectives.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration is facing backlash from some Republican lawmakers and MAGA supporters who are disappointed that Trump failed on his non-interventionist promises. Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky said on X that Trump's decision to attack was, quote, not constitutional. Massey, along with Bay Area Representative Ro Khanna, introduced a resolution on Tuesday to prohibit U.S. involvement in the conflict.
And we were promised that we would put our veterans, our immigration policies, and our infrastructure first when, you know, they were rattling the sabers because we saw this coming. We put forward this war powers resolution. Mm-hmm. I've teamed up with Ro Khanna before on this, to his credit, when Joe Biden was president. We tried to rein in the executive and reassert Congress's authority, sole authority, to declare war and to engage or authorize the engagement of acts of war.
I'm Teresa Wersbianska for Pacifica Radio.
This is Gary Oldman. You're listening to radio powered by the people, KPFK 90.7 FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. So in case you missed it, President Donald Trump announced on Saturday that the U.S. military struck three nuclear facility sites in Iran in an unprovoked act of aggression. The strikes come after Israel launched its own unprovoked attack on Iran on June 13th, leading to an all-out war between the two countries. The Iranian government's Atomic Energy Organization confirmed the strikes, saying that they, quote, were attacked in a violent act against international laws, including the Non-Proliferation Treaty, end quote. Regional Iranian officials also confirmed the strikes, as Iranian news outlets have reported. The strikes mark the U.S.'s official direct entry into the war, though the U.S. has provided Israel with support in its bombings on Iran and has also helped provide defense for Israel. The attacks come after politicians and warmongers in the U.S. have called for war with Iran for decades. In a brief address on Saturday night, Trump layered further threats against Iran, saying that the U.S. would continue its strikes if Iran doesn't, quote, make peace, end quote. He called Iran the, quote, bully of the Middle East, end quote, and said the strikes had gone, quote, a long way to erasing this horrible threat to Israel, end quote. Israel, the state that in addition to currently conducting a genocide in Gaza, has actually been the one relentlessly attacking and invading countries and territories around it for decades. Numerous lawmakers slammed the strikes, saying that they are unconstitutional as domestic law prohibits the president from launching an unprovoked strike without approval from Congress. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called for Trump to be impeached. UN Secretary General condemned the strikes, saying, quote, this is a dangerous escalation in a region already on the edge and a direct threat to international peace and security. There is growing risk that this conflict could rapidly get out of control with catastrophic consequences for civilians, the region, and the world, end quote. And in addition to bombing Iran, the Trump administration has also imposed a total travel ban against Iran, as well as 11 other mostly Muslim majority and African nations, which went into effect on June 9th. Also included in this recent travel ban are seven other nations that would face severe restrictions. So in total, the executive order from Trump's White House would impact people and families from 19 countries. 12 nations would face a total ban. That's Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. And people from seven other nations would face severe restrictions: Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. Council on Islamic American Relations, CARE, has been one of the many organizations that have been supporting legislation that would prohibit U.S. armed forces from engaging in hostilities against Iran, as well as legislation that would prevent future presidents from abusing immigration authority to impose blanket travel bans rooted in discrimination and racism, like Trump's new travel ban and his possible expansion of it. So with us today to talk about U.S. bombing of Iran and the Trump administration's total travel ban against Iran and 11 other mostly Muslim majority and African nations, as well as seven other nations that would face severe restrictions under this new travel ban, is our guest, Hussam Ailush, Executive Director of the Greater Los Angeles Area Governance Board Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE LA. Through his work at CARE, Hussam has engaged elected officials, media, and the public to enhance understanding of Islam, encourage dialogue, empower American Muslims, and build coalitions that promote justice. In 2017, Hossam joined more than 20 plaintiffs in a federal lawsuit filed in Virginia by the National Muslim Civil Rights Group challenging President Trump's Muslim ban on the ground it violates the First and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution. Welcome, Hossam Ailush, to Middle East in Focus. We're so happy you can join us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Nagwa, for hosting me, having me. It's always a pleasure listening to you guys, and let alone conversing with you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for all the important work that you all are doing. Let's jump right in. As I mentioned, CARE was one of the many organizations that called on members of Congress to co-sponsor and support a new bipartisan war powers resolution introduced by Representative Thomas Massey, as well as Representative Ro Khanna, that would prohibit the U.S. armed forces from engaging in unauthorized hostilities against Iran. With the breaking news of the Trump administration's strikes on Iran this weekend, where does this war powers resolution stand? And can you comment on these latest U.S. strikes on Iran?
Absolutely. I mean, you presented a great introduction to what is happening, and I don't want to repeat everything. But certainly, we see this escalation, this act as illegal, unjustified declaration of war against Iran. It's an unnecessary, unneeded escalation because it's based, again, on our long tradition of false pretexts that justify our involvement in usually Arab, Muslim, and oftentimes brown countries. This has absolutely no benefit to U.S. interest. The overwhelming majority of people in America, American citizens, opposed the war. There is only one entity that's pushed very hard for this assault, or this attack, that was AIPAC and its supporters, on behalf of the government that it represents, the government of Israel, headed by war criminal Netanyahu. So there are no interests for us. And, you know, our own nation's intelligence community have said again and again that there is no evidence that Iran is seeking nuclear weapons. It's clear what was meant is satisfying a base, a voter base, support base that President Trump needs and appeals to. And unfortunately, he knows, as many other American politicians in the past have known, that escalation, aggression against that part of the world receives little condemnation or accountability here in America or around the world. Now, as for the war powers resolution, we all know it's probably one of the most elastic laws in America. You know, every president, let's face it, both Democrats and Republicans have ignored it and have chosen to interpret it as it fits their own actions. Usually, with a new modern interpretation of war or declaration of war, basically, many of these presidents claim that airstrikes, quick incursions under the under pretext of national security, preemptive or preventive war, or war on drugs or war on terrorism, do not constitute a declaration of war. So they've always bypassed that by saying, "Oh, this was needed to prevent a war." You know, only in the sick logic of our politicians this gets away. But the reality is, oftentimes, these presidents have enough support in Congress because each of the political parties have politicized it. They play politics and partisanship when it's the opposing president, you know, from the opposing party. But then when it's their own, they find a million excuses for such acts. And let's face it also, and conclude with this, when it comes to advancing Israel's interest, there's enough support on both aisles in Congress. So I don't expect much other than some symbolic gestures from well-meaning members of Congress, you know, on both, usually the fringe of both Democrats and Republicans speaking up.
So, you know, I want to get into the travel ban as well, but just really quick, staying on this this point around the war powers resolution that's being introduced by Thomas Massey and Representative Ro Khanna. So, as I said in my intro, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others have already called this unconstitutional, have already said that these strikes and other actions that have been done in the past by other administrations have been in violation of the War Powers Resolution. So why is a new resolution needed? Is it essentially to ensure that there is no ambiguity that these kinds of strikes are unconstitutional?
Yeah, it's a statement, right? It's a statement that the Constitution still matters. But unfortunately, even as we make that statement, when you notice how many, you know, how it is a minority of members of Congress supporting it, even playing politics is not, you know, happening, meaning a majority of Democrats are not even supporting it because, again, many receive enough support from AIPAC-connected PACs and donors. And this is this has been an AIPAC requirement. So people are willing, elected officials, many of them, are willing to put our or set our constitution aside to advance the interest of you know, the lobby that represents the apartheid state of Israel in our country. So yes, it is needed because we establish a statement that the constitution is important, American interests are important, accountability and oversight is important because, you know, we're still don't have a king. You know, that's ironically we're talking no kings here. But Trump, and again, I don't want to pick on Trump because other presidents have acted that way when it comes to certain military actions that could be described as declarations of war or acts of war.
And, you know, we'll have to bring you back on to dive deeper into this War Powers Resolution that's being introduced and have a follow-up conversation to see what its status is and hopefully we can bring you back to talk about that it has successfully passed, but we'll see where that goes. So now let's jump into the travel ban. Now, in addition to bombing Iran, the Trump administration, as I spoke about in the intro, has also imposed a total travel ban against Iran, as well as 11 other mostly Muslim-majority and African nations, which went into effect on June 9th. One of those nations included in that is Afghanistan, for example, which the U.S. also invaded, caused chaos, and caused a refugee crisis because of the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. And now they are also included in this most recent travel ban. And now we see the same thing happening with respect to Iran. Also included in this recent travel ban are seven other nations that would face severe restrictions. So a total of 19 nations are subjected to this new travel ban. Can you talk about who this new travel ban impacts and who is exempt from the ban?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I want to put things in context because everything is interconnected. This is part of the platform that President Trump and his supporters, many of them are very xenophobic, and have made it clear they want to put a stop on what they deem as a, you know, the cultural change of America. You know, we all know what that means. That's code for protecting the white European image or at least perception of image of what America stands for. Meaning there was a need to prevent or maybe stop or limit immigration from brown countries. And, you know, that is South American, Central American, Latin, Muslim, African, Arab, Asian, or also, you know, that's what we witnessed today with the ICE raids around the country, specifically in LA, targeting specifically undocumented people from brown countries and mostly Mexican or Central Americans, where we know there are undocumented people, you know, over 750,000 of them from Western countries and Canada. We don't see raids on them. We don't hear about them because it is driven. These policies, whether it's the ongoing addiction to war that we have in that part of the world, in the Middle East, or the various versions of the bans or restrictions or targeting of migrants or the raids now, specifically target one type of people. This is not a coincidence. It's not just it happens to be this way. We have a government that is not only creeping us into fascism, but also driven at the most part by xenophobia. You know, and various forms of it, including Islamophobia. So now back to your question. You know, you listed the countries, 12 countries, including a majority of them being Muslim and African nations. The countries include Afghanistan, Burma, Chad, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, as completely restricting, suspending immigration and non-immigrant visas for citizens of these countries, and certain bans, you know, partial restrictions for countries or citizens of these countries, Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. Now, who is included? Basically, citizens from these countries, with keeping in mind a couple of exemptions. One, anyone who already has a permanent residency status, you know, what we call the green card. If somebody has, as opposed to the earlier ban, you know, those with a current green card status, permanent, legal, lawful permanent status, are exempt from this ban. Anyone who has a visa, a current visa, that was issued before June 9th, which is the effective day for this new ban, is still exempt from that. Anyone with a dual nationality, meaning they have a nationality of that country, let's say Iran, but something else, French, and as long as they enter the U.S. From another country other than the exempt or the banned country. So two conditions also, you know, makes somebody exempt. Having a dual nationality, meaning a nationality other or in addition to the banned country, and that they're coming from a country other than the banned one. Mm. And there were other limited exceptions and exemptions dealing with people who are part of the, you know, the facing torture, people who are here on certain humanitarian or national interest perspective. Maybe they were former informants, people who are on refugee status, people who, you know, there was an exemption mentioned specifically for people participating in the Olympics, as an example. So these are the people who would be exempt from the ban.
Okay, so for those who are lawful permanent residents or visa holders from one of the listed countries, can they travel, and they're here in the U.S., can they travel abroad while this travel ban is in effect to one of the listed countries?
Yeah, the quick answer is yes. First of all, let me clarify, I'm not an attorney, so whatever I give is not a legal advice. I'm always reminded, as you would know.
Yeah.
By attorneys to say that. I oversee, I work with a lot of attorneys, and they've taught me well on this one. And I would say, in general, the answer to that question is you should not worry about it. You can travel. If you are a lawful permanent resident or a visa holder from one of these listed countries. However, things are unique. Each case is unique. So number one, I would say expect some secondary questioning. I mean, even us citizens are dealing with it these days. But also, because each case is unique, I would say consult with an immigration attorney before you travel. Why is that? Because some people might have a unique situation, especially if you are a vocal activist against the genocide, for example. Ironically, chances are if you're vocal against Trump and U.S. foreign policies or domestic policies, you're fine. You're not usually questioned or harassed. But if you happen to be critical of a foreign state, such as Israel specifically, actually uniquely Israel, then you will be harassed. And sometimes we've seen people facing challenges with their visas. So I would say consult with an attorney so you would know how to deal with it if it happens. Or maybe, you know, you might weigh in the factors and say, you know what, maybe I don't need to travel until I see things, until the dust settles on this issue. Case by case, yes.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are speaking today about U.S. bombing of Iran and the Trump administration's total travel ban against Iran, as well as 11 other mostly Muslim majority in African nations, as well as 7 other nations that would face severe restrictions under this new travel ban, with our guest Hussam Ailush, Executive Director of the Greater Los Angeles Area Governance Board, Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE LA. Gosh, I have so many more questions, and we're already running out of time. Hussam, I'm going to combine a few questions here. Can you talk about how this new travel ban is different from the Muslim ban imposed during Trump's first administration in 2017? And And about the bills that CARE has been urging all Americans to support, which is the National Origin-Based Anti-Discrimination for Non-Immigrants, No Ban Act, and the Access to Counsel Act, and why these acts are so important to ensure that these travel bans don't continue under future presidents.
Absolutely. And I'll try to be brief. I know we're running out of time. So in terms of the difference between this new version of the travel or what we're calling, I mean, to begin with, we're calling it Muslim and African ban because clearly African countries and people are being targeted as opposed to the original one in 2017, as we call it, the Muslim ban. Some of the differences are mostly on the scope and the targeting. In 2017, there were seven Muslim majority countries that were targeted. In 2025, we see 19, you know, larger number of countries, including countries that are not Muslim, such as Venezuela, Cuba, Haiti, and so on. So making it, you know, obviously the Trump learned from you know, the first iteration by making sure that he escapes having it being called Muslim ban because people didn't have the appetite for that. Also the rationale. In 2025, you know, in addition to the national security pretext and concerns raised or used by the Trump administration, he added basically the aspect of overstaying a visa. Said, well, we picked these countries because most of these countries fit on the list of countries where their citizens had, you know, the largest number of people overstaying their visa. Again, hiding behind some numbers to avoid being accused of having a racist and selective policy and law. Also, there were enough notice, you know, to avoid the chaos that we witnessed at the airports and points of entry, and making it a little bit more difficult to challenge because they added the exemption that I talked about earlier, meaning people who already have lawful permanent residency status or people who already have visas, valid visas, were exempt. So basically creating less harm and damage, less panic, and making it harder to challenge legally through court. And we're witnessing that. You know, that's why originally in 2017, we were able, along with other civil rights organizations such as the ACLU, you know, CARE and others, were able to challenge it through the courts and win and force the Trump administration to revise the executive order. As for the specifically the No Ban Act, the National Origin Based Anti-Discrimination for Non-Immigrants Act, which is called No Ban Act, and the Access to Counsel Act. Very briefly, the No Ban Act is basically a bill that was introduced by Congresswoman Judy Chu from LA with support of 97 co-sponsors, all Democrats. Basically what it is, it aims to restrict the president's authority to suspend or restrict the entry of individuals to the United States based on their national origin or religion, basically. It says it's illegal. It basically strengthens our laws that prevent discrimination and requires less restrictive rules, making it very narrow in terms of who can be restricted based on very specific, credible evidence. It can be collective punishment because everybody comes from that country. It has to be based on some suspicion of criminal behavior, and it allows Congress some oversight. It's going to be a challenge because, again, Republicans control Congress. So, it's a very worthy effort, and we ask people to support, demand that their members of Congress support it. It's going to be an uphill bill, hill. The Access to Counsel Act basically was introduced by California Senator Alex Padilla. It aims, and it's supported by 15 senators, again, all Democrats. I'm not trying to be partisan, but I'm just showing how difficult it's going to be to bring in Republicans into supporting such bills. But in summary for this act, it basically calls to protect the rights of individuals detained by ICE, the Customs and Border Protection people, by CBP, at ports of entry, airports or borders, requiring that they have right to legal protection, you know, an attorney, counsel, and also to make sure that they're not forced to give up their rights. We've heard about cases where people were threatened with fines or different aspects or punitive acts, forcing them to engage in voluntary deportation, so giving up their rights to enter the U.S. or their immigration status. I tried to be brief. I hope I was able to.
Oh, that was perfect. Thank you so much. We're going to have to bring you back on because I have so many more questions, but we'll do it in a follow-up show. Thank you, Hussam Ailoush, for joining us today, Executive Director of the Greater Los Angeles Area Governance Board.